Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique Studio Plus suite awaits, with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your Studio Plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
It's time for the Del Olalea Show
on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Now broadcasting live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Del Olalea.
When the world was a time of this and that, I was young, didn't know to hold it back. Now we're here in the world, something else. We can leave any day and call for help. We were gods, nobody was above me. The A on my chest like a Dolce. The A on my chest, put your fist up. The A on my chest like a chipmunk. Alvin.
Welcome into the show. It's Friday, which means Michael Carroll will join us at 11:30 to give you something to watch, because maybe some of you are going to check out on the Rockets season. So maybe you need something to watch starting tonight. They do have a game, second night of a back-to-back against the Heat, who also are on the second night of a back-to-back, traveling from Miami after losing to the Sixers last night. But the Rockets suffered the same fate, unfortunately. They lose to the Warriors. And really, just a business-like professional ass-kicking. That's what the Warriors gave the Rockets. It was, I won't say it was never a ball game, because at points the Rockets cut it to 5 and to 6. Jabari Smith was a big part of that. But they were never really threatening the Warriors. And it felt like a team in the Warriors who knew this was a chance to bury this team and make the rest of the season relatively comfortable for them. I mean, they're not going to catch the Lakers. The Lakers actually may get out of the 9 and get to the 8. The Warriors are probably stuck where they are, and they decided enough games. We're tired of having this conversation and people updating us on the Rockets and whether we're going to even make the play-in, and they came out there and dismantled the Rockets. It's unfortunate, but I wouldn't say it was unexpected, considering what the games the Rockets had lost recently, when they had taken a step up in competition and the schedule got tough. It's not that they didn't compete. They competed against the Wolves. The Mavericks are a different story. They had a really great player in Luka take over that game early and just change the complexion of the ball game, and they could never get back in it. But the game against Minnesota, they were up, then they were down, and they fought back to eventually be within a possession and a point of beating that team, but Minnesota closed it out. And at that point, considering what the Warriors had done leading up until last night, you felt like this was just going to be kind of a culmination of a season that started off well, then was poor for a while, and then a major injury happened, and a guy we had questioned throughout, and Jalen Green, took off. The Rockets overall had started to play better before the Şengün injury, and we'll have an update from Ime Udoka on Şengün. He spoke before the game last night on the possibility of Şengün returning. Seems unlikely considering the words that Ime had about it. But overall, it felt like the Rocket team we had watched for most of the year. That Warrior team had dominated them throughout. It was part of the reason they had the tiebreakers, because the Rockets couldn't really touch them. And it felt like the Warriors woke up and said, not today. We're going to smother you early and make it very difficult. And they did that. So you want to give the Rockets some credit for making this a game that had some importance. But overall, it was a very comfortable victory for the Warriors. And I don't even really want to dive into the performances. You know, Jabari Smith had a great game. Others, not so much. Jalen Green didn't have a great night. He wasn't alone. But you saw the step up in competition. You saw when a team that has even a small goal, like the play-in, is in reach, what the Warriors turn into. And certainly the Rockets being the opponent helped the cause. But you're playing a team who won 4 titles. Did we really think this point where the Rockets weren't really even in the race that they were going to win that game? No. And the Warriors, if we did have any doubts about the outcome, the Warriors kind of snuffed out any hope the Rockets had. I mentioned we were going to hear from Ime about Shingun, but Ime Udoka also talked about his team. He was underwhelmed by their performance, and that's putting it lightly. He had some very strong words for how they played last night, probably harsher than you might expect from the head coach of a team, unless you know Ime Udoka. Here's Ime Udoka on the Rockets and their performance against the Warriors last night.
It looked like the moment was too big for a lot of players out there. So it looked like deer in headlights a little bit. Either looked soft or scared, one or the other, and that's two bad things for a lot of our guys to have, and didn't rise up to the moment like I thought we would.
The soft or scared stuff hurts. Like, the moment's too big, okay, understandably, it's the most important game a lot of these guys have played. You know, Jeff Green and Fred VanVleet have played in big games. It's not the same for them, but for your young stars or your young core to have that said about you, not great. Sean, we would say the lights are too bright. Those lights were too bright for the Rockets last night, but soft and scared, that's rough. That's something you're going to have to push back on, and you can only prove that on the floor.
That feels like what we would say run through the Ime Udoka translator, doesn't it? Like, what we would say is like, yeah, weren't ready for the moment. Obviously, you're facing a veteran team that's, I mean, not even been here and done this, have been much bigger places and done that.
Yeah.
And, you know, you put it through the computer that says, all right, now how would Ime Udoka say this? And it was,
We got a bunch of soft-ass boys on this team.
Yeah, yeah. We're soft or scared, I don't know which.
But either way, not good. Yeah, it's rough, man. You know, I'm sure the Rockets, up until this last stretch, were feeling pretty good. Like, hey, we're fighting, we're pushing, we're competing. Not last night. And then the coach comes out and gives you some, at least in his assessment, a very honest view of what happened. Soft, scared, and I think he mentioned bullied at some point as well, in a different sound bite. So that's not encouraging. You hope that is maybe a rather harsh assessment. Maybe they just didn't play well. But because even CP3, you know, backup point guard now for the Warriors, discussed how the Rockets were playing defense. He said they're playing old school defense. They're physical and had their hands all over them. He told Draymond. He relayed what he told Draymond Green in the game. So at least early, the Warriors didn't think they were playing soft and scared. They thought they were playing a brand of defense that we don't normally see in the NBA. It just so happens the Warriors weren't going to miss shots.
No.
Klay had a vintage game. If not for the 15 first half turnovers, that could have been a 30. The way they're shooting could have been a 30-point lead, it felt like, but they limited their own opportunities because of their turnovers.
Yeah, that's kind of been a Warriors thing.
Yeah, they always turn the ball over.
Even when they were winning 73 games in the regular season, they just turn the ball over a lot. I agree with CP's assessment that it wasn't. That's why the like soft or scared. It's like maybe scared.
I don't think they played particularly soft. No.
But scared, maybe. On offense, definitely. But, I thought the defense was fine in the first half. Obviously, in the second half, just like...
Yeah, the game got
whatever.
Away, yeah.
But in the first half, I thought they were at least competing. Yeah, at some point, it's just like, yeah, that's Klay Thompson. He's going to make those.
I don't know if you've heard, but Warriors ball movement and making shots, it's kind of their MO when they're at their best, and the Rockets got all that last night.
Yeah, it is the offense it's what we've seen, you know, from the Mavs and the Timberwolves games where they don't really have much other than Jalen Green.
Yeah, and if he's not having a great night.
If he's not having a great night, and if he's not, if no one else is there to kind of bail him out. Jabari Smith played all right, but it wasn't enough playmaking on the court to really threaten the Warriors or make a run that wasn't based off of points off turnovers.
Yeah, half-court offense not great for the Rockets last night. That'll be something going forward that they need to improve, and maybe just the adding Shingun back into the lineup would help their cause. They're not a great offensive team, and it showed itself last night. And then when they give up the type of shooting night they did to the Warriors – it's going to be an ugly ball game, and they lose 133 to 110.
Julian, I see you, noted Bay Area fan and also a fan of Shogun. So I'll talk. We'll get to you on the other side. So if you want to talk, if you guys want to talk about what happened with the Warriors or the news about Stephon Diggs that we'll get to as well, that it's basically the Texans and Diggs are flirting with each other for a year, and they'll see if they like each other, and maybe they will sign a longer term deal. But if you didn't hear that news or see it, we'll talk about kind of a hedge for the Texans, I'd call it. We thought they were all in. Maybe not. Maybe, hey, we're just going to let this play out. So Diggs gets more money, but he also gets probably something he wanted as well that doesn't really benefit the Texans if he has a great 2024. So we'll talk about that. We'll get into more Warriors. We will hear sound from Klay Thompson. He wasn't thrilled with Tari Eason, and it showed itself on the court because the Warriors heard it, they remembered it, and they played into it as they were taking apart the Rockets last night. So Warriors, a lot of Warriors and Rockets, certainly Texans as well. We'll get into the Astros as they head to Arlington for the first game of their series against the dreaded, maybe not dreaded, but the hated Rangers. We'll be back.
This is the Del Olalea Show
on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Broadcasting live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Del Olalea.
Julian, I see you. I'll get to you here. But first, I wanted to let you guys know, on Monday, Gallant and George and the Killer Bees will be broadcasting live from Space Cadet Bar. You can join the guys and then watch the national championship game and Astros versus Rangers. On Monday, they will have a special burger beer combo deal, bucket specials, and victory beers for the Astros game. If you're asking what victory beers are, pretty simple. If you arrive by the third inning and the Astros win, you'll get a free victory beer. So make sure to get to the Space Cadet on Monday to hang out with us and stay for the Astros and national championship game. Sean, how does it work for you? Because of this show, are you going to be able to get out there? Or are you going to be doing the show, or does that keep that from happening?
I'll be honest. I'm 1 week at a time.
You haven't even looked at the grid yet?
I have not looked at the grid, so I have no idea.
Sean is a baseball player, just one game at a time.
You know, I'm focused on today, Dell.
That's right. Can't look ahead. Trust the process, and the process is you focus on the day ahead, not next week. So at some point, Sean will know where he will be.
I mean, I can find out very easily.
All you got to do is type in grid in Gmail, and you'll be able to find it. But while he's doing that, or maybe not, he'll probably wait. Let's hear from Julian. Julian wants to talk about the Warriors and other things.
To be clear, I am not a Bay Area fan. I am a 49er fan.
Okay.
I just think it's funny that Tari Eason did all that bull crap, saying, you know, Warriors come out to play. He wore a shirt that said the same thing, and then he comes out. I read that he came out without the shirt after the game. And if you're going, what do the cool kids say? Stand on business, right? He didn't stand on business. He let his teammates go out there and get their ass kicked for him. And, well, anyways, that's enough about that trash dude. But Shogun, man, just keep waiting for Crimson Sky, and it hasn't came yet. And I'm just wondering, what the heck? Like, we don't have that much time left on this show, bro. Like, I'm hoping it's not this, oh, yeah, Crimson Sky, and then it ends up being bleh. So, you know, and what's his name? The white dude, he's getting more ballsy. He's starting to say stuff, kind of almost be disrespectful. I wonder if... He runs out of luck with his attitude.
So, if you guys don't know what he's referencing, we're at the very end. Well, not the very end. A couple episodes ago, Shogun, and Crimson Sky is this major alleged military offensive that might happen, and we've been waiting for a couple episodes. And there was a death at the end of this episode, which is. It's tragic and funny off the same time. Considering who it happened to and how it happened, it was amazing. Shogun's the show of this show, and I know if you haven't been watching it, Julian just said a lot of things you don't know anything about, which is your signal to go watch the show. It's really good. It's on FX and Hulu, or now the Disney Plus and Hulu brand are combined, so it's on Disney Plus now too, so you can watch it there. Shogun, we're in. Yeah, I don't know what Crimson Sky is going to be. It could be nothing. It could be a fake. Just to, but yeah, the Anjin, as he said, the white dude is getting a little tired of being told that he has things, but not being able to do anything with it. So we're getting to the conclusion of Shogun. I think it's three more episodes ago. I think it's a 10-episode, just a one-season show based off of a book. Sean, did you watch this past week's episode?
Yes, I did, and I wonder how much of the lack of Crimson Sky and how it they seem to be taking their time with it has to do with the fact that, as you mentioned, it's an FX and Hulu show.
Yeah.
Not exactly Game of Thrones, Prime, HBO. Can have like four major battles in a season type thing.
Yeah. I mean, some of it is certainly that it was a book, so maybe the book is stretching this out. It turns out that in the book, the character who dies at the end didn't die in the book. It's a show invention because he's pretty much inconsequential. So they gave us something. Let's have this guy die this way because he doesn't do anything for the rest of the book anyway. So go watch it. Not just so you can know what we're talking about, but because it's a great show. Lance talked about it earlier today. He has a fascination with Mariko. Mostly because apparently he's looking. I don't know how much I want to put out there on Front Street about what he said off the air. So I'm gonna keep it to myself. Some things you keep to yourself, despite all the slander he throws my way. I'm not gonna throw out what he threw out.
But that's classy of you.
Yeah, but he likes that particular character for reasons, and I'll just leave it at that. The beginning of Julian's call was a takedown of Tari Eason. Tari Eason, as he mentioned, did not play in the game. He did wear a shirt. There was, I won't call it a confrontation, but after the game, Tari Eason was dapping it up with some of the Warriors. Draymond, who likes him quite a bit, despite the back and forth that's been going on recently. Hey, man, see ya. Next time we see ya, good luck the rest of the way. All the stuff that guys say at the end of the game. But a guy who did want Tari Eason to know that he saw him was Steph. Because Tari Eason was walking away from the little meetup. He wasn't talking to Steph, but Steph kind of raised his arms and said something. I don't know. We don't know exactly what he said. But Tari Eason noticed and heard Steph, and Tari just clapped and said, "Yeah, man, you got me." He just started clapping a couple times. But it was of the ilk of, "I'm going to see you a little later," as far as the next game. Not in a fight, but, hey, this ain't over. We ain't going nowhere. But Tari just kind of clapped it up and said, "Yeah, you got us this time, but this ain't the last time you'll have to deal with us." So Steph and Klay Thompson certainly weren't thrilled with Tari's comments. I haven't watched Warriors, which is what Tari Eason was referencing when he did Warriors Come Out to Play. I think it's a movie from the late 70s. But apparently in one of the clips, there's a guy who says Warriors Come Out to Play, and he's wearing like bottles on his fingers. And late in that game, Steph had water bottles on his fingers on the sideline when he was sitting on the bench because he and the Warriors weren't thrilled. And another guy who was not happy with Tari Eason was Klay Thompson, who had a big night last night. Klay Thompson, after the game, was asked about Tari Eason and the Warriors Come Out to Play stuff, and here is his response.
Seemed like you guys heard that Warriors Come Out to Play video.
Yeah, that's pretty lame, especially if you're not even playing. Like, it's one thing if you're playing, you're out there competing, and you can back it up, but if you're just going to be trolling from the sideline, like, bro, what are we doing? Like, at times we talk mess. At least we're out there competing. I'm like, that's all I have to say about that.
He was disgusted. I mean, if you find it on X or Twitter, you will see the disgust on Clay's face. Now, Clay is a talker, as he mentioned. He will throw up four rings at you as often as anybody does anything as far as trash talk is concerned. But yeah, Tari didn't play. His team got their ass kicked, and Klay Thompson and Steph Curry went a combined... Steph didn't even have a great night shooting from three. They went a combined 9 for 17 from three. That's too good if you're trying to beat them. Both scored 29 points, and they didn't even have to play the fourth quarter. I mean, Steph only played 31 minutes, which is kind of par for the course for him recently, and Klay played 29. He scored a point a minute, 11 for 15, 7 for 11. He destroyed the Rockets last night in what you would call a vintage performance. And we're not looking for vintage performances from Klay Thompson on a night like last night. Hey, can you give us your modern performances? The ones that got you benched at one point for Pozynski?
It's like the opposite of going to a concert. It's like, please, Klay, we only want to hear the new stuff.
We don't want to hear the old classics. No classics. No. Billy Joel, play something off and something from the last 4 years. We don't want to hear anything. We don't want to hear anything that got you started and made you very popular. Yeah, it was a game six Klay performance. He lit the Rockets up early and often, and despite the 18 turnovers overall and the 15 turnovers in the first half, outside of a couple moments when they were within five or six, it wasn't even a ball game. So the Rockets go down. They're now four full games behind the Warriors, but without the tiebreaker, which the Warriors own coming in anyway, it's now five. So you have to be six games better than the Warriors the rest of the way, and which means you have to win all your games, and the Warriors have to pretty much lose all their games. So let's wrap it up. And we can applaud them if we want, but let's wrap this up. Time to go.
Luckily, there are 9 days left in the NBA season.
For the Rockets.
Yes, for the Rockets and everyone else who did not make the play-in tournament.
If you're not a top 10 seed in your conference.
April 14th is the last time you're lacing them up.
Yeah, I don't know if the Rockets had plans for Cancun, but it's a place that they can schedule them right now. They don't have to worry about it. If they're holding out, you can make those plans right now. Get the moving company in there. I don't know, all you guys on 1 year deals, get the moving guys ready. If you don't think you're coming back, Aaron Holiday, I'm not sure what your status is next year, but wherever your permanent home is when you're not in season, get the moving guys. You probably should have done that after the Mavericks game, but whatever. Get those guys and get yourself squared away, because this Rocket season, as far as consequence, ended in a big way last night. Keith, we see you. You want to talk about the women's Final Four? A couple interesting things going on there. The women's game wants to change the way they hold their tournament. And then there is a moment where as much progress as they've made, as much attention as they've made, you've got Caitlin Clark doing a media availability near loading dock, apparently. And a reporter, as they want to do, complained to the NCAA. And the NCAA had a response that, well, I'll tell you about it when we come back. Keith, we'll get to you as well. We'll be back.
This is the Del Olalea Show
on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Broadcasting live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Del Olalea.
Welcome back to the show. Keith, frequent caller. Sometimes it's about street free agents. Sometimes it's about Baltimore Ravens football. This time it's about the women's Final Four. What's up, Keith?
Hey, guys. Love the show. Tonight, predictions. I've got South Carolina by 30 over NC State.
30.
That Cinderella story ends. And then in the show, the primetime main event, the nightcap, I've got Iowa by 3 over UConn. The Clark versus Paige Beckers duo is going to do big numbers. Iowa plays South Carolina Sunday night for the title.
Do you have a prediction since you won't be able to give one between now and the final? I guess you just want to pick a semifinal. I like how NC State is a Cinderella. They're a 3 seed. I get the men's team being a Cinderella.
Cinderella.
UConn is a 3 seed. I know.
But it's UConn. Come on.
Understood. But I'm not giving anyone Cinderella status when they're a 3 seed.
Well, it has to be like 5 seed and under?
I guess in the women's game, even though that's even changing.
I think part of it's what conference you come from, too.
The ACC plays pretty good women's basketball.
Yeah, I'm just saying, like, if, like, a five seed, like, you know, St. Mary's or, you know, Mountain West team or something, then you're like, okay, this is like San Diego State last year. Although there's nothing but Cinderellas and UConn in that Final Four. But it's like, oh, wow, this is a new
– Well, you say that, but I get Cinderella and these teams don't have a lot of history. But FAU would probably classify certainly as one.
Yeah.
But Miami won their regular season in the ACC last year. No one thought about it. They lost in the semifinal of the ACC tournament. They're in the Final Four. San Diego State's been a really good Mountain West program for years. They would probably bristle against the Cinderella thing. They made another sweet 16 this year. NC State's a Cinderella. Despite all their history, this version, the men's version, is a Cinderella. The three seed in the women's tournament, stop it. They're not a Cinderella. They probably are going to get beat. The number is 11.5. 30 is a lot, though. NC State's a pretty good program. We'll see. Maybe Keith is right. They are going up against the undefeated South Carolina Gamecocks. And then he mentioned the primetime matchup, UConn versus Iowa. And speaking of Iowa, we all know Caitlin Clark's a star. We all know she's getting a lot of attention. So her availability yesterday was a big deal for a lot of media. The people wanted to hear from her. They had stories to write, that stuff to send back. I don't know how well the sound quality was. You guys can determine it when you listen to this.
In the NCAA tournament last year, and she hasn't shied away at all.
Caitlin, what would you say drives you, and how would you describe your on-court mentality?
Yeah, I think what drives me is just, you know, I think there's always...
I should have said how good the quality was as opposed to well. You heard that. It sounded like she was next to a loading dock. You heard the backing up sound, and then you also heard horns. And needless to say, some media people weren't thrilled. They wrote to their local NCAA representative about it. I guess like it's Congress. They wanted to complain and stress that, hey, she's the biggest star in your game. What are you doing? How could she not be in a better spot when all the attention is on her? And you can't see the video, obviously, but in the video, even Caitlin Clark is leaning in to try to hear what the reporters are saying because of all the background noise. And one, Adam Jacoby, he was someone who was covering it, and he wrote to the NCAA asking. He covers Iowa basketball, so this is certainly a big deal for him. And when he asked them about this, this was the reply. There was no perfect solution to the breakout area, but you should know that you are in the minority with your complaints. Caitlin Clark provided media access for almost an hour today, and if you couldn't get what you needed from her in the 1 hour of her four media sessions, that's on you. So they're like, hey, man, she was available for a long time. Do better. Do your job better.
That's snippy.
It's a little snippy. It makes it seem like they got more than just a few complaints if they had that type of response.
Hey.
Caitlin Clark.
You got 3 hours with her, right?
Caitlin Clark provided media access for almost an hour today.
Oh, almost an hour.
And if you couldn't get what you needed from her in one of her four media sessions, that's on you. NCAA ain't having it. Don't complain. Just be better.
Yeah. Hey. They weren't working for that long, you know?
I think it's appropriate that one of the more toothless institutions, people question their ability to do their jobs all the time. It's like, don't blame us, man.
I will say, if you're the NCAA, you kind of it's hot right now for the NCAA. Not just with the Congress. I mean, literally just with the women's tournament and the fact that they had an Elite Eight game played with uneven three-point lines.
Yeah, they've had a rough one.
I don't know if they deserve to be the, hey, if you can't do your job, that's on you. It's like, we just need you to paint lines on a court correctly.
Can you get that done? Like, if it was the Sweet 16 round, and then if you watch the Elite Eight game, you see they couldn't adjust the actual shading part, so they moved the lines out to match. So watching the game, you'll see the one in the court that was screwed up. It's mismatched as far as the paint job when you compare them. So they had to just push the lines out to make it regulation. Yeah.
But But they're telling people how to do their job.
Exactly. Hey, I know we have issues, but this is on you. You figure it out. And I'm watching the video again. Caitlin Clark's not only leaning to try to hear people, she actually kind of makes a wry grin because what the hell is this? It's pretty much the face she's making. So even the star of stars noticed how bad it was. But hey, Adam Jacoby, be better at your job, and then you wouldn't have these problems.
I will say, you know, that this speaks to the star power of Caitlin Clark that we're talking about this. Do you know a single thing that was said at the men's Final Four press availability or any story that came out of the men's Final Four press availability?
Only the thing I had already been paying attention to, that Dan Hurley is pushing aside their travel issues. I did see UConn people, because of course they can never be happy with anything. They're upset with their hotel rooms.
Cool.
Not just the fans who Dan Hurley said were as obnoxious as bleep, and when talking about them, one of their media—I don't know if it's their AD or whoever is a muckety muck for UConn basketball—said they're not getting the treatment that befits where they are, pretty much. So they don't like the rooms aren't great. They're doubling up, and apparently DJ Burns is getting a single room. Sorry, none of your guys are the biggest star is that guy. Sorry.
Is that how they do it?
I don't think that's how they do it. But the UConn fans were not appreciative.
Does he have an NIL deal for like the Hilton Tucson or whatever?
Phoenix? Yeah. I don't know.
He was able to get a suite?
I don't know, but he's very happy with this room. I don't know that any UConn players complained, but the UConn fans, after they saw that their guys had to double up, were upset. But this is the UConn thing. They complain about everything. Now the accommodations aren't great. We're not being treated like we should be.
The only thing they have the right to complain about is the plane thing.
The plane, yes.
But even that, it's like, oh no, you got in only, what, 3 days? 3 full days before your game tips off.
Sorry.
Oops. Only have like 70 hours to prepare.
So they were supposed to get in on Wednesday at 3 p.m. Eastern time. Oh, supposed to leave at 3 p.m. Eastern. That did not happen. If you missed it, UConn had travel issues as far as their plane not being able to get to their departing airport in time. They took off, if I'm looking at doing the math right, about 9.5 hours late. They arrived on Thursday morning at 6 a.m., which is, 9.5 hours after they wanted to. But now it's about the hotel rooms, and of course they'll just go on and win the tourney and then talk about how everything was against them. It was actually the athletic director said Wednesday's travel issues, we're not being treated to a championship experience. I don't know, man. Planes are planes. Hey, you see the issues? You should be glad it's not a Boeing plane.
Yeah, turn on the news, dude. Yeah. Could be worse. You're still getting a chartered flight.
Did you get to your destination without the plane dropping out of midair? Take it as a win. Hopefully you were on an Airbus plane as opposed to a Boeing, because that would have been much worse. So UConn complaining, reporters complaining. That's kind of just how it is.
It's the Final Four.
It is what it is.
that's the Final Four. Reporters complaining about stuff.
And UConn complaining about stuff. Nothing new there. We haven't got to the Stephon Diggs thing because calls have diverted us, but we'll talk about Stephon Diggs when we come back. We'll hear from DeSean Jackson, of all people. He explains why Stephon Diggs wanted out of Buffalo, and we'll also tell you about the contract, how it changed, and what it might mean going forward. We'll be back.
Broadcasting live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, it's the Del Olalea Show.
On ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Now back to Del Olalea.
Welcome back to the show. The Diggs trade happened minutes before this show started a couple days ago, and it led to me speculating about contracts and how long he'd be here, the Texans are all in, all the things you think about before you have any real news other than he's now a Houston Texan. Well, the Texans have said maybe we're not all in. Maybe we're hedging, and this is a one-year thing, and we'll see how it plays. And if it's great, then maybe we're going to have to pay Stephon Diggs a lot more money than he would currently, well, before they ripped up his deal, than we were actually going to have to pay him for the next couple of years. But we also don't want to be on the hook potentially with him. And Stephon Diggs had a part in, had a say in this when the news of a potential trade was floating between him and the Bills. He Texans were a team he was interested in, and the Texans and their discussions with him told him, hey, we'll give you more money up front. So what they did was they brought some guarantees from next season up to this season, so, or this upcoming season. So he's going to make over $22 million a year. And so, and it turns into a one-year deal instead of a long-term deal. So the Texans are on the hook for this year, and maybe that's all. We're all going to see how it plays out. So at this point, it's a one-year deal for Diggs, and it costs you, when you consider trading a second and getting back a fifth and a sixth, about a late second, early third, which is good, but the Texans are protecting themselves from what some of you might think is the inevitable Diggs blow-up, which he should be happy. He's getting a lot of money, more money than he would have gotten in Buffalo for this year. But I don't know that if I'm Stephon Diggs, I do this. Because if you're 30, think about this. If you're 31 years old, who's going to give a 31-year-old receiver a long-term deal for a lot of money? Like, how good would he have to be, Sean, for another team? It's funny, you're already seeing reports. It's not even reports. It's just people thinking up things. And something I saw on CBS Sports was, what teams could be the next landing spot for Stephon Diggs in 2025? And the Texans weren't even on the list.
We're doing 2025 free agency.
Yes,
watch.
It's early April, and you have to write about the NFL. This is what you do.
Are the Chiefs on there?
I'll bring it up. But the thing that stuck out to me was the Texans weren't on. I think the Commanders were on the list. But if you are a team, how good would Stephon Diggs have to be for you to be all in on him, considering what we know about him, the fact that the Bills wanted to get away from him, and he'll be 31 years old? Is he going to get what the Texans were on the hook for? And they weren't really on the hook. They could have cut him after 2024 before they did the restructuring, or just a ripping up the deal. And no, there was no cap hits, dead cap hit. So they could have cut him, and that 18 point something that he would have been owed if he was on the roster wouldn't have affected them. So let's say, if I do the math here, let's say the last couple years of the deal, 3 years at $70+ million, if he was still on the roster. Is Stephon Diggs getting that on the open market at 31 years old?
Probably not. I mean, it would have to be like a 1,300-yard.
He would have to be
seven
really
touchdowns.
Good.
Yeah, it would have to be one of those type of seasons, which would be hard. A lot of mouths to feed on the Texans offense. But, I doubt it. Just because, I mean, part of it is the age. Like, I think even more than personality, it's the age. These things always start good. You know, he's never a malcontent from day one.
No.
There's always some period of like, hey, excited to be here. Hey, Josh Allen, Stephon Diggs, look at this combination. Like, it's year 3 and 4 in Buffalo that he had the issue. It was the last year in Minnesota that he had issues. It wasn't the first one. So there will be a team that needs a wide receiver, that needs some explosiveness, that can look at it and be like, you know what? But the 3 year $70 million isn't happening.
Well,
like, yeah, it'll be like 2 years, 40 guaranteed, 35
maybe,
guaranteed,
something like that. And as I brought up the contract and on Spot Track, and it's crossed out, so he would have been, if I can see this, it would have been 18 in 2025, his base salary, 19, a little bit over 19 in 2026, and a little under 14.5. So that's not 70 plus, but it's still a really good chunk of change. And 37, you're around the $52 million over the last 3 years of the deal. So is anyone giving him that? Maybe, but it's a risk for him.
But I will say, if he thinks he can do better than that, then he has to. He basically has to be a free agent next season. Because any later, and he's definitely not getting.
He'll be old. Yeah, he'll be 32. You're right.
So he can't really play out that contract, because basically by the end of it, he would.
He'll be 35.
to be 35 and then be like a $9 million, $7 million receiver kind of range where it's a, you know, veteran presence. He'd be the Robert Woods for another team.
But except he's a malcontent, at least according to people.
Yes.
So he would not be a guy people bring in to usher other receivers along.
Yeah. Yeah, it would be like the Odell Beckham, I guess.
Yeah, who's still available at this point. Although Tyreek Hill just tweeted out OBJ to Miami confirmed. He might just be trolling because there's a picture of them hugging each other from this past season.
Does he have a CTE ESPN?
No, it's just an Instagram post. Oh, okay. He doesn't have a fake / official news organization like Antonio Brown does. I get it from the Texans perspective. Let's not marry ourselves, even though, like I said, if they cut him, it wouldn't cost them. And someone texted me and let me know that if they cut him, they wouldn't get a compensatory pick. That's why it might benefit the Texans to just have him on a one-year deal and then release him.
Or let his contract expire.
Yeah, it would benefit them just to let it expire because, in fact, if you do cut someone, you don't get the deal. That was the point of you don't get the compensatory pick. That was the point of the text. But because of his age and how long he's been in the league, like if he signed a giant deal, you normally get a third-round pick back. But because of how old he is, they can't get more than a fifth. Because of years of service and all those things. So it's a play to – it's a hedge. I don't think it's anything more than a hedge. Like if he's great and he's a solid citizen, then the Texans may be willing to give him maybe a two-year deal at the money he wants. And if not, it's a second-round pick for one-year Stephon Diggs, and you see how it plays out.
What would you say the odds of that happening are, of Stephon Diggs – being a Texan in 2025 and 2026 or 2027, you know, just in the future, when you consider that they still will have to pay Nico Collins, or at least theoretically, there's a choice to be made between him and Nico Collins. And depending on how long that contract is, then you run into, well, you're going to have to pay Tank Dell eventually, you know. And I have a hard time seeing them paying both of them, I guess is what I'm saying.
I think I agree.
Which one would you want to pay?
Well, if Nico backs up what he did this past year, you're taking the younger guy who doesn't have the apparent attitude issues that Stephon Diggs has been alleged to have, although he thinks he's a great guy. In fact, we didn't even get to that sound yesterday, so I want to play that when we come back because Stephon Diggs has a better opinion of himself than even some of his teammates do.
He's a great guy.
Yeah, I'm a great guy. What are we talking about? So we'll play that from his time in Minnesota. If it's a choice between productive Diggs and productive Collins, I'm taking productive Collins. Now, if Nico Collins is a one-year flash in the pan, then it makes the discussion more difficult. And maybe you side with Diggs, maybe, because he still will be much older than Nico Collins. I feel like because of what they've done, this is going to be a one-year thing. And they hope it's a one-year deal that leads them to a Super Bowl and a Super Bowl win. But after that, we'll say thanks, Stephon, for your help and your presence. We're going to move on. And I think if he's great, he'll be fine finding a deal. It'll be interesting to see after three teams have decided they didn't want him around. And maybe the Texans, at that point, it would be more about cost as opposed to attitude. What he'll get on the open market. But he's betting on himself, and the Texans are protecting themselves. And he was more than willing to, as long as he got more money up front, which is what he did. Now he gets free agency sooner. So it was very NBA-like of Stephon Diggs. Like LeBron has done that, where he'll take a short-term deal, hold the team over the fire to make moves, or I'm going to go. He did that with the Cavs a couple times. Now, Stephon Diggs can't hold the Texans over the fire. And they are more than willing to be in on trying to win the titles. But maybe not all in on wanting to pay him long term. And speaking of Stephon Diggs and wanting to win, before we go, let's get to this DeSean Jackson thing. DeSean Jackson was with Kay Adams. And DeSean Jackson had at least what he feels is insight on why Stephon Diggs wanted out of Buffalo. And here's what he said.
It's deeper. Like you said, it's not just him not being a football player or being able to, you know, get the statistics, you know, it's something deeper. And I can't sit here and tell you I know, but I just know as far as quarterback, receiver, they really didn't have, I wouldn't say they went eye to eye, but it was just more of him wanting to win, I think. You know what I'm saying? And I don't feel like he thought they was going to be able to beat the Chiefs. That's AFC East, I mean, not the AFC East, the AFC Conference is the Chiefs. And I feel like I think he would rather go with the young quarterback and, you know, a new team that's driving, I mean, that's thriving, instead of staying with the Bills, where they every year are getting beat by the Chiefs.
He didn't think they could beat the Chiefs. That's a statement right there. I mean, that's...
Hey, man, we've seen it year after year after year. I mean, what is it, about four or five years? It's been tough.
It's not a statement, Kay Adams. It's just the truth. Why wouldn't he think they couldn't beat the Chiefs? They don't beat the Chiefs. It would. They had a home game finally against the Chiefs, and it didn't matter. So we're talking about LeBron. I mean, the Bills are kind of like those Pacer teams from the mid 2010s. Paul George, Roy Hibbert, David West. They got their brains beat in by LeBron. Eventually, they're like, let's get this number one seed. If we get the number one seed, then we got game seven at home. All LeBron did was beat him in game six, so they didn't even have the opportunity to face him in a game seven. So I could see Stephon Diggs wanting a change of scenery and going, look, it ain't going to happen here for multiple reasons. He watches veterans on the defensive side of the ball leave. Going to be a maybe not a completely new team because Josh Allen still remains, but there's been some departures for Buffalo. Maybe he saw the Texans as a new opportunity and a different chance to go at the Chiefs. We'll see. Certainly want the Texans to be involved in that conversation of challenging the Chiefs, and Stephon Diggs should help the cause. That is hour one wrapped up. If you want to talk about Stephon Diggs or other things, call the show. Welcome. I welcome all. You heard the Shogun talk. You've heard Ryan and his evaluations of Hollywood actresses. You can do that too, or something else, 713-780-3776. Or tweet at us at Sean A. Mapes at DelV2. 1 hour to go here. We'll be back.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique studio plus suite awaits, with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and Leon starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
Breaking news coming in from Bet365, and it's no surprise. Same Game Parlay from Bet365 just keeps getting better.
Well, it's even easier to make a bet. Choose from the most popular markets, like hits, run line, totals, and home runs. So many to choose from.
Download the app, start building your bet, and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.